Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
Big studies, huge, that have been done that have found that if someone just goes to worship attendance regularly, that their divorce rate drops anywhere from 25 to 50%, in some cases even more. And that is something that every churchgoer is unnecessarily discouraged about because they think it doesn't matter. And the reality is it does, and it actually matters a lot.
That is powerful insight from Shanti Feldhahn. Today here on the Homeward broadcast, we're going to continue a conversation with Dr. Jim Burns and Shanti Feldhahn talking about confronting the myths about marriage and divorce. If your marriage is in good shape and you want to get a little ounce of prevention here, we're glad you've tuned in. If your marriage is kind of on the rocks right now, even what Shanti just said about husbands and wives just simply going to church together, even if you don't really have a lot of things to say to each other when you go. Very valuable insight. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, graduating difference maker since 1899. Welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Thank you so much for your prayers and faithful financial support of this ministry. As we come up on the end of our fiscal year, really appreciate hearing from you with a gift of any amount today. And now, here's Jim.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. A continuing conversation today with Shanti Feldhahn, one of my favorite people, confronting the myths about marriage and divorce. Shanti is an incredible writer, an incredible speaker. She's a Harvard-trained social researcher. She's written the book For Women Only and For Men Only. And actually, I remember telling Shanti once that I actually passed those books out to our donor base at Homeward one Christmas just because I believe so much in them and in her message. She's written a brand new book also called Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages. But today we're going to talk about a brand new book of hers that actually has just come out. It's called The Good News About Marriage, Debunking Discouragement Myths About Marriage and Divorce, and it's great to have her with us. Shanti, welcome to the broadcast.
Great to be back with you.
You know, Shanti, you've written a wonderful book, The Good News About Marriage. And it really is good news. One of the things you say is that this 50% thing is not the story, that it's actually quite a bit less in terms of divorce. That actually is incredibly positive and motivating. But one of the things that fascinated me about your book was that you said one of the biggest eye-openers for people in the faith community, because a lot of us have quoted for years, it's about the same within the faith community, that the divorce rate of the church is just as high inside the church as outside the church. But you say that's not the case.
No, not at all. Because listen, I've quoted that statistic too. I mean, I've stood up on stage at a marriage conference and said, sure, well, you know, the rate of divorce is the same in the church. Yeah. And when I started looking at all these numbers, because this, of course, was one of the things that I was looking at, I was stunned when I looked at the George Barna studies. Because, you know, everybody quotes the Barna study.
Sure, sure.
And it turns out that the Barna group was never studying people in the church. That wasn't what they were trying to do. It's been a huge misunderstanding all these years. And I actually talked to George Barna himself at the conference that I, when I shared this with some of your folks,
yes,
a couple
exactly,
of years ago.
Exactly, I remember it.
And I thought, oh my goodness, he's going to be another speaker. So you might remember I cornered him.
I totally remember that.
I cornered him and started asking him a couple questions. And he said, you know, I would love for you to correct this misunderstanding. Because here's what he was trying to do and what the Barna group was doing. One of their skill sets, one of the things that they're really good at, is calling people on the phone and asking the "Are you a Christian?" questions. You know, studying belief systems. And the people who said that they had a Christian belief system had the same divorce rate as people who said, "No, I'm not a Christian. I'm a Muslim or I'm an atheist or whatnot." Those two groups did have the same divorce rate, but Barna specifically excluded whether they went to church. That wasn't part of what he was trying to analyze. And so what I did is I partnered with the Barna group for this, and I bought their data, and we reran all of those numbers with one factor added. Was the person in church last week? And if the person was in church last week, their divorce rate dropped by 27%.
Incredible.
And by the way, that's actually the smallest drop that's been found by all the studies. There's actually been multiple studies. I want to say I quote about six or seven of them in the book. there's six or seven of these studies, big studies, huge, that have been done that have found that if someone just goes to worship attendance regularly, that their divorce rate drops anywhere from 25 to 50%, in some cases even more. And that is something that every churchgoer is unnecessarily discouraged about because they think it doesn't matter. And the reality is it does, and it actually matters a lot.
Well, I mean, that's a huge change. I mean, that's a game changer. Now, by simply attending church, how does that strengthen a marriage?
Well, I think here's one of the main things that happens, and there have been a lot of different studies on why it matters and all that kind of stuff, but there's a few to me that rise to the surface of what it is that's happening. First of all, we could say, you know, they are in a community where the Holy Spirit is working, where God is working, and they're truly trying to connect with God in every area of their life, including their marriage. Now, one of the other books that I've done is actually about the secrets of the happiest couples.
Yes.
And why they're so happy. And one of the things that I noticed amongst the happiest couples is they were much more likely to say that God is at the center of our marriage. So it kind of makes sense. If God is at the center of your marriage, you're more likely to be a churchgoer, I would think. And that is more likely then to lead to a good, lasting marriage. But I think there's another reason that is really, really critical that pastors need to be able to trumpet from the stage, because right now they're really discouraged. They need to be able to say, you know, it really matters if you come to church because you'll be part of a community. You'll be part of a community where, you know, I don't know if the folks listening have had the same experience that I have, but, you know, I've had a few friends whose marriages have gone downhill, and it was really critical for them to be part of a community where somebody could say, you know, Laura, are you guys doing okay? And sort of catch things, and that kind of early intervention can make a huge difference.
Sure. So too many people do marriage alone. They do parenting alone, and you know that they were not meant to do that. They were meant to do it in community. Let me ask you a question about the person who's listening and says, "That's fine, but you don't understand my wife, or you don't understand my husband. You know, my husband is an alcoholic. My husband goes to church, talks the talk, but doesn't live the talk, and my husband is not going to change."
Well, okay, so here's where we get into some of the other outgrowths of, okay, what does this mean for the couple that is the exception?
Yeah.
For the couple that doesn't have that kind of hope right now.
Right.
And really the reality is, one of the things that we mentioned in the last program is there's a power that comes with sticking it out and committing and saying, I'm not going to give up,
yeah.
Right? Like, even if my husband, my wife isn't doing what I feel like they should do, I'm still going to do what I can do. And one of the things that I found in the other book I mentioned, the Surprising Secrets of Highly Happy Marriages, as I was doing the research for that and surveying all of these really happily married couples, there was a pattern that a lot of them had been in that kind of bad place and had gotten really happy. And one of the reasons is that they had determined they were not going to focus on all the stuff that was discouraging them and that they would just continue to do what they could do, but they would focus on what was good. It's basically an application of the verse in the Bible that talks about think on whatever is lovely and think on whatever is excellent and true and pure and worthy of praise. Because, you know, that's the passage where Paul says, you know, rejoice in all things. You know, I'm going to say it again, rejoice. And you think, okay, Paul, you're in prison. You're chained to a wall. How do you do this? And we think that we can do something and just stick with it and we'll endure, but we won't feel like it. We're just making a choice despite our feelings. And that's how it starts. The reality, though, is Paul says, here's how you do that. You do think on whatever is lovely instead of what isn't, and you think on whatever is excellent rather than what's driving you crazy. And what happens is that your feelings start to change. Here's an example. I was talking to one of these couples where actually it was a wife with a husband who had a pornography problem and really didn't want to go to church, and she was just really unhappy. And she said, you know what, I'm going to deal with this. And she started to say, okay, what can I do that is focusing on whatever is lovely? And so she started to say, instead of, you know, how are you doing with the pornography thing? You know, is this, I really don't like this, and focusing on that 100% of the time. She said, you know what, we'll deal with this. We're going to get through it. We have counseling. But I'm also going to say, you know what, you're an amazing dad. And thank you for, I noticed that you took Johnny out and played in the yard, even though you were so tired after work. Thank you. And she said at first her husband was like suspicious, what? What's going on? But she was really sincere. She was sincerely finding things she could praise and appreciate. And she started to see his heart softening. And she started to see him willing to want to do things to make her happy. And it totally changed to the point where, yeah, they had to get through some of this icky, other difficult stuff too, but their relationship was so much more happy. It made it easier to get through the icky stuff. It made it easier to deal with it. And it was entirely because she changed her attitude.
Isn't that interesting? Her circumstance didn't change, but her attitude did. Yeah. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Roger, that's great insight. You know, really what we're talking about today is hope. And when you start hearing these kinds of statistics that she's sharing, which is very different than what we hear in the culture, that's positive. That's motivating. And at the same time, when somebody has a family member, a spouse who has alcoholism or there's been affairs or there's been these things, it doesn't mean that you can just wipe that away. You've got to deal with those issues. But at the same time, you know, I think there's always some positive. I find that most people who persevere and will work through the issue, that they do find hope at the end. Not everybody, by the way. But great insight today from Shanti. We'll come right back. When we come back, I want to ask her about remarriage and just where does that fit in. Again, the book is called The Good News About Marriage, Debunking Discouraging Myths About Marriage and Divorce. I love the book, and I just love and appreciate so much all that Shanti Feldhahn does, and her actually wonderful husband, Jeff. They've written some books together as well, and Roger's going to tell you about this book right now.
Well, actually, Jim, I'm just going to mention the link that we have up at homeward.com because it's easier. Jeff and Shanti have written so many books, and they're all great. We just put up shanti.com, and you can click there and find out more about everything that they're working on. This new book about debunking the myths about marriage and divorce is very, very insightful. It's good news. It's not pie-in-the-sky Pollyanna stuff. And go to homeward.com. You can learn more about what Shanti and Jeff Feldhahn are up to. And now here's the conclusion of today's Homeward broadcast and Jim Burns.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. What a great conversation today with Shanti Feldhahn. Actually, anytime I've ever had a conversation with Shanti Feldhahn, it's been incredible. It's great. I appreciate how positive she is, but I really appreciate the fact that today, as we talk about confronting the myths about marriage and divorce, we're actually getting some great news, and even great news about the church, that if you actually even attend church, that you have a 27% drop in the probability that you'd get a divorce. And, you know, frankly, I'm just glad to hear that news because it feels right. And yet, you know, I look at the statistics that are so awfully scary, and I'm so glad that she's giving us, you know, some other types of information here. Shanti, I want to look at remarriage for a moment. A lot of our listeners are remarried, and you say that for many years we've heard, you know, kind of how high that divorce rate is, but you say there's a different story even on remarriages.
Oh, yeah, not just a different story, but like a different planet, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, see, here's really the thing. Anybody who's remarried, I can guarantee you, every single person in your listening audience who is remarried has heard that second marriages, yeah, 60% of them end in divorce or more, right? And 70, I think the number that you usually hear for third marriages is 73% of them have ended in divorce. So what I felt like my job was, my senior researcher, Tally Whitehead, who wrote the book with me, we spent the last three, four years basically trying to track down the studies that said that so we could examine them.
Sure.
Right? I mean, like, you know, how did they do their methodology? Was it any good? I just wanted to see how they got those numbers. So we traced every single citation in a book and magazine articles, and they all trace back to three sources that don't exist.
Wow.
It looks like it's a pure urban legend.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, my word. I mean, I was telling somebody this, and he was like, you're like Snopes for marriage.
<You know?
laughs>
That's funny.
And I kind of felt like that, yeah, too. But and here's really why we started doing that. The numbers that we saw in real life were completely the opposite. And so here's what we actually found that does exist in terms of the real numbers on this. It's still very complicated. It's still hard to get one right answer, but we can get a lot closer. Just like we said in the last program, 72% of people are still married to their first spouse. Mm-hmm. 65% are still married to their second spouse.
Some.
Yeah, and of the 35% that aren't still married, a much bigger chunk of that than in first marriages has to be because somebody, you know, there was some widowhood involved,
yes,
not just divorce, because they're getting married at older ages.
Right.
And, you know, we don't know exactly what the divorce rate is, but we can make a better estimate. You know, it's got to be less than 35. So we can say maybe about 30% based on the rate of widowhood and other things, maybe 32%. But that's a whole lot better than what people think it is today.
Yeah, and it is a whole lot better. And yet we still have to work on marriage. We still need marriage books. We still need conferences. We still need, in the church, you know, classes on this because, again, we've got to keep working on it. But that's an incredible statement when you say that, that the news is so much, much better. And, you know, a lot of times I think I find people who are in a second marriage who will say, hey, I made some poor decisions in my first marriage. And if I would have known what I had known, I probably wouldn't have, you know, gotten a divorce. But today in their second marriage, they seem to be happier because, you know, they've learned from that. So part of it is learning from your past mistakes or whatever.
And that is so encouraging for people who are on their second marriage. I actually have a girlfriend who was a single mom for 10 years. And I gave her a draft of the chapter on, you know, just this subject because I kind of wanted to make sure that I wasn't writing things in a way that wouldn't resonate with people who were remarried. And she emailed me back a comment that I thought was so profound. I basically said, stop the presses on the book so I could put it in. Because she basically said, you know what this does for me? I guess she'd been remarried for about maybe 9 months, something like that. And she said, up until today, I have felt like I had to protect myself. Because statistically, I knew that no matter how committed my husband and I were to each other, statistically, we probably wouldn't make it. Because she'd been believing the myth that we all have believed. And so she said, so there was this feeling like, for the sake of my kids, I just have to protect myself a little bit. I have to have a little bank account on the side or something just in case it all goes wrong, because it, you know, statistically probably will. And instead, one of the things I found in some of the other research that I've done over the years is those kinds of actions that we take to protect ourselves, like having a bank account on the side, they build a wall.
Yeah.
They build a lack of trust, and it actually leads to the problem we're trying to protect ourselves from.
Isn't that interesting? And yet I understand her resistance.
And yet,
you know, that is great news for her.
She actually told me, she said this, you know, in 1 minute reading this, she said it changed everything because she knew that statistically that she probably would make it, that the chances were fantastic that this marriage would last the rest of her life. She could be fully invested, completely all in. She didn't have to have that sense of discouragement. And, you know, you said something, Jim, that I think is so important. Like, why do we still need marriage ministries, right? If most marriages really are happy and if the divorce rate is lower than people think, there's a feeling like, okay, well, do we really need to be talking about this? Well, here's really what I realized. Divorce isn't really the greatest threat to marriage. It's discouragement that is the greatest threat. People most need hope. They don't need to fight the tide of divorce. Most people need hope. And that is what all of these ministries, all of these books, programs like yours, people need to have that hope, that sense that they can make it.
Right. Boy, and you know, that, and I think that's in the church. I mean, even when you think about Easter Sunday and other things, it's all about hope.
Yeah.
If we make it about, and in the church for too long, we've actually, you know, talked about all the negative stuff. And I'm not saying we don't deal with sin issues and other things, but hope is what motivates us. That's the motivating factor. It's not the negative, and that's what we're talking about today. Now, and this goes along with my next question. You know, one of the most common assumptions I think about couples who experience, say, conflict, they say, well, they're falling out of love, and no one really cares. You know, one of the persons doesn't care for each other. What you're saying is that's not true. They're not falling out of love.
No, they're not. Most of the time, what happens with a conflict is you've got all these hurt feelings, you've got all this stuff built up, and you just don't know how to get past it. And one of the things I found in one of the other books is how critical it is to really believe the best that the other person does love you, the other person does care about you. And that means you start approaching it instead of, I can't believe you did this, or you don't care about me. Realize, you know what, they really do. So maybe they didn't intend to hurt you. maybe there's another explanation, and you can approach it more generously.
Yeah.
And that leads to a spiral upward in happiness rather than the spiral downward that comes when you believe that all the news is bad and we're probably going to just not end up having a happy marriage someday. And instead, no, most marriages aren't perfect, but they are enjoying each other.
Yeah, no, that's great news. And one of the things I appreciated, even reading this book and reading any Shanti Feldhahn book, is that basically what we need to do is learn that our husbands and our wives are very, very different. We've got to learn, you know, what are men like, what are women like. And one of the things that I underlined in your book, as you said, what I had to learn was that my husband was very, very different than me. And I actually had to confess that I had to recognize not only did his emotional needs and insecurities exist, but that they were legitimate as my own.
Yeah, there is that. It's really easy, I think, for women and men to not necessarily recognize that they are trying so hard and it's not having the impact they think it should be having. You know, a lot of men say, nothing I do is ever good enough for her, right? Well, that's like a clue. Okay, maybe what you're doing isn't the right things. you just didn't know because you want to make your wife happy. Or maybe it's like me as a wife, and I was trying so hard to show my husband I loved him, and I had no idea that at the same time I was telling him what to do all the time, and that he was taking that as she thinks I'm completely inadequate, which for him is his most painful feeling. And suddenly, once we learned these little things, it really made this huge difference. And so suddenly, that's a whole nother type of hope that people need to have, that, you know what, this isn't rocket science, they can get through this, and that really some of these little adjustments can completely turn the ship of a marriage, and it doesn't feel like, oh my gosh, inexorably we're going to be sucked downward into this hole of having this difficult marriage. Truly, it really makes a difference to be able to look at someone and say, you know what, it's difficult right now, you're going to get through this, most people do, don't worry so much.
Wow.
That makes a big difference.
Wow. You know what? That is a great way to end this broadcast, because it is so important for people to hang on to hope. And that, you know, it may not be easy right now. You may need to persevere, but it's going to get better because you're willing to persevere. And I think that's been the message. Shanti, thank you so much for being with us today.
It is always a pleasure.
Well, thank you for writing the book, The Good News About Marriage. I know there are so many other books that you've written too, and I hope people will do as I do and read everything that you write, because I just think it's so powerful and important. And this has been a great broadcast here on Homeward. So thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
So, Roger, I'm going to tell you a story. There was a husband and a wife who went to the doctor. The husband was going to the doctor. The wife was just accompanying him. And he was in there for about an hour and a half, and she thought it was going to be a lot quicker. He comes out, and his face is kind of pale, and he looks like he has been poked and prodded, and obviously he was. And the doctor stood at the door, not a nurse, and said, "Can you come this way?" Brought the wife in, set her down, and said, "Your husband is severely ill, and I've just done a lot of tests. I'm going to learn more about it, but I'm afraid your husband is going to die if he doesn't take care of himself. And I think there's some things that you can do. And if you do these and follow my instructions, a year later, I think he'll be fine. But if not, you know, he could die. And it's that I want you to fix him a warm breakfast every day, a big breakfast, a warm breakfast. He said he likes, you know, omelets and eggs and bacon. And I know he gets up really early. And so you're going to have to get up earlier to make that happen, if you don't mind. And a great lunch. And then at dinner, his favorite meals. And because he has a lot of stress in his life, you're going to have to take the stress off. So you're not going to be able to do any of the, you know, types of things where you're going to share your problems with him, because that's going to bother him. Take care of the kids. If the kids are being a problem, then just, you know, put them aside. But you take care of the kids and let your husband rest. Let him watch a lot of football. Let him watch a lot of whatever shows he wants to see. And then, well, frankly, you're going to, you know, please him in any way that you can. And the woman didn't say anything. She said, and if you do all these, I think within about 10 months, 12 months, he'll be just fine. So she walks out the door, and the husband looks at her, and she looks about as stunned as he did. They get in the car, and he says, "Honey, he was picking and prodding and poking and, you know, with me, but then he brings you in. I mean, that scares me. He didn't tell me anything about why he did all this. You know, what did he say to you?" And she paused, and then she said, "You're going to die." Well, actually, the moral of the story is, if you don't work on your marriage and you're not intentional on your marriage,
yeah,
a marriage can die. But what Shanti has told us today is that, you know what, if you work on your marriage and you stay connected, you're going to have a happy marriage.
True.
So I think that's a great way of thinking about it. Be intentional, be proactive, Don't give up. Don't give up the ship.
Right, and make sure you go to the doctor with your spouse when you're both in the room at the same time. Our thanks again to Shanti Feldhahn. Again, the book is up at homeward.com. We've been talking about confronting the myths about marriage and divorce, and anything that Shanti does research-wise is well worth the investment, so we highly recommend you check it out today. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, our chief operating officer Andrew Accardi, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.